Parshas Ekev. Parshas Ekev. It starts off, V'haya Ekev Tishmeru Neisem Eitha Mishpatim Ha'ila. When you listen to these laws, U'shmartim Atisim Osam, you keep them and you do them, it says, V'shamar Hashem Elokecha L'cha Atza Bris V'atza Chesed, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will watch over you with the bris and the chesed asher nishba l'avosecha that he swore to do to your fathers. And then it goes through a whole bunch of brachos that it brings all the way down. So here's the problem. It says, Ekev Tishmeru Neisem Mishpatim. So it should say the word mitzvos. Or at the very least, it should go into the three different types of mitzvos that there are. There's chukim, there's mishpatim, and there's edus. But it's not just mishpatim. It's strange that it says when you listen to the mishpatim. I mean, those are the things that I would have listened to anyway. These are the types of things, like keep it up aim. I would have done that no matter what. Don't murder. I understand that. I understand that I can't do those types of things. So what, I'm being praised and I'm being told because I go ahead and I do the things that I would have done anyway, therefore I'm being rewarded? Well, what does that mean? Why am I being rewarded for that? Why are we calling it just the mishpatim? So there are obvious answers. The obvious answers are, well, if you did them because just they make sense, then you're not going to be rewarded. But if you do them because God told me to, God said do this, then you'll be rewarded for it. That's the obvious answer. Those are the obvious answers there. But there's another answer that's brought down. B'nai Yisrael just spent the last 40 years in the Midbar. What did they do for the past 40 years? Nothing but learn Torah. They sat and they did absolutely nothing else. For 39 years of it, we don't even know. There's no complaints. There's no anything else. It's just they woke up in the morning, they learned Torah all day long, they went to sleep at night. There's nothing else. They were sitting in the same place for 19 years in one city, 19 years in another city, all right by the land of Edom. They didn't move anywhere. They didn't go anywhere. They just sat there 38 to 39 years, 38 and a half years altogether, just sitting and learning Torah, eating the mun, drinking the Be'er Shomerim. It doesn't get much better than that. I mean, you can't get much better of a life than that. It was mamish like Olam Haba, just instead in a bunch of clouds in the middle of the desert. It would have been Olam Haba without the amenities of all the fields and the grass and the trees and the beautiful birds and everything else going around. But otherwise, this was mamish like Olam Haba. Their nefashos, their neshamos were so pure and so clear. Everything was so clear. They were able to look at a chok. They looked at these chukim, at these laws that were not the right laws. And they said to themselves, they're not chukim, they're mishpatim. They were able to look at shatness, and they were able to understand it. They figured out what shatness is all about. They figured out, they understood what Basar B'Cholov was. They looked at it and they said to themselves, oh, come on, yes, this is your spot. It's fine, don't worry. But they looked at it and they said to themselves, this makes a lot of sense to me now. Now everything makes sense. Now I can look at it, now I can get it. There was no such thing as a chok. No such thing as a chok that was so out of the ordinary that I can't figure out what pshat is. No such thing. It wasn't a drug-induced assumption where they went into it and they were just like, oh man, this is such a great Torah. And they went in and they assumed that everything was going to be okay. That's not what it was. It's reality if you take taiva away. If you take all the taivas that you have in this world, you take them away, and then you look at the Torah, all of a sudden Basar B'Cholov becomes something that you can make sense out of. Shatness becomes something you look at and you're like, yeah, I understand this. Grafting, doing things with plants or with animals that you're normally not allowed to do, all those things that are, to us, are totally misunderstood, that we don't understand at all and we can't get, all those things make a lot of sense. Make a lot of sense. For 40 years, they didn't have chocolate. For 40 years, they didn't have sugar. 40 years, they didn't have any of the tummy foods, machlos, asuros, or any of the bad things that can ruin your body and take you away from thinking the right way and doing the right thing. 40 years, they didn't have any of that stuff. And even the stuff that they asked for slug. They asked for a bird that came down from a Kaddish Baruch Hu. They asked for something that was tremendous. They asked for something that was going to be even more. So they didn't have a metamtim's lathe, a nefesh that was knocked down. They had a nefesh that was so clear and so with a Kaddish Baruch Hu that they said it was all mishpatim. And that's what it became. But Ekev Tishmon's mishpatim ha'ila. All the things that are understandable, desirable, and everything over there. So you ask yourself, I don't want to learn. I don't get why I have to learn. You don't want to daven. You don't want to get up in the morning. So cut out the taivas. And then you're guaranteed it's going to be okay. It's guaranteed you will be on the level of Klal Yisrael for those 38, 39 years where they were sitting there and they understood what it was like. They understood that there was something there. Because they sat there and they didn't have the problems that we have now. Cut out the garbage and you'll understand it.
Being lazy, is that a taiva?
No, it's a different thing. Atzilus is something totally different. It's the exact opposite of taiva, actually. It goes more as taiva is water. Dirt is laziness. Ufer is laziness, just not wanting to do anything at all. Totally different idea. Ooh, we're bringing a little bit of Tanya here. Yes, 100%. The whole point of mitzvos is to weaken that taiva. It's latova for everybody in the world. There's nowhere in the entire Torah where it says you should do something that weakens your body, or that knocks you down, or gives you no strength to do anything else. We're not like the other nations of the world who believe that the holiest people are the guys who sit there and shave their heads off and pull, I don't know, just sit there meditating all day long while fasting for 750 hours a day. Granted, fasting can make you holy. And we're not denying that if you do it in the right way. If you're doing it for the right purpose, in the right types of ways. Granted, that can happen. There are people that are doing tiny safsakos and fasting all week long for that type of purpose. There's no question that that can happen. But the main point, there is nowhere in the Torah where it says that you should fast. In fact, even in Yom Kippur, it doesn't say you should fast. It says, V'nisim et nafsho seichem, afflict your souls. But it never says anywhere that you should straight out fast. It doesn't tell you anywhere to hit yourself. It doesn't say anywhere that you should take out a whip, start whipping yourself, or start hurting yourself, or start doing anything that'll make you feel like you're more in tune with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's them, because they feel that God is out to get them. They feel that God is against them. In order to be like God, you have to like plague yourself. You have to do as many bad things to yourself as you possibly can. Then you get close to God. We feel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu just wants you to love Him. We want to be together with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to be together with us. So He wants you to be as close to you. He wants to be as close to you as you can possibly get. That does not take all those things. There's only one mitzvah that's not like that. And it's Bris Milah. But even Bris Milah is done when the child's flesh will heal the quickest, and in an area that also heals the quickest. And again, the only reason why it's done is not just Stam, let's see if you can do it for me. Let's see if you can sacrifice a little bit of yourself for me. That's not the reason why. The reason is to knock down the taiva of a person. That for some reason, and it's somewhat proven by science now, although sure, science will get there eventually, that there's something there, that area of the body, the orla, with it, a person has a tremendous amount of taiva. Without it, it's not as much of a taiva. Seems to be that way. It seems to be that it's all about taiva in one way or another. It seems to be it's all about the taiva. If there's a sakana involved, it's usur, absolutely usur to give a bris milah. The other nations of the world would say, give the bris milah. If he dies, he dies. HaKadosh Baruch Hu obviously wants him to die. But it's not like that. For 38 years in the Midbar, Bnei Yisrael sitting and learning all day long, sitting in clouds, eating mun, drinking the bear Miriam, and they didn't give themselves bris milahs. Why? Because it was dangerous. So you have to understand how these types of things work, how they go and how they don't go. The times that you do it and the times you don't do it. One weakening of the goop is good and one weakening of the goop is bad. Okay. Moshe Rabbeinu speaks about, goes into this week's parsha, and he says the following. He says that, I got the Shnei Luchos of Brisk, Suvim Be'etz Ba'alokin. It's in Parak Tes, Pasuk Yid Aleph, Yim Ketz, Arvayim Yom, Arvayim Laila. I brought down the Shnei Luchos of Banim Luchos of Brisk. Remember, she's like, Kum Reid, Maher Mizeh, go quickly down. Ki Sheikh Ezamcha, your people have sinned. Shotetim Mitzrayim that you brought out of Mitzrayim. Sorrow Maher Minadar Hashizivisim, Asulam Masecha. They've turned away from the road that you have commanded them to do. They have made for themselves a molten idol. Vayom Rashem Elai, Lamor, Rezi. We say yes, Almazevi. Now, Sheorafu. I'm going to destroy them. I want to do that. He goes down. But Espos b'shnei luchos. I grab those two luchos up on him. Moshe Rabbeinu says, "Vashlichem el shtei yodai." I threw them down from my hands. Vashabram leinechem, and I broke them in front of your eyes. Okay. There's a tremendous chazal, and I don't know if I'm going to be able to say, you know, I even a quarter of what's supposed to be said when it comes to this Maimer Chazal. It is a Maimer Chazal that is just absolutely crazy. Absolutely crazy. But the Maimer Chazal goes the following. It says, Avodah Zara, Davdalah Mabez, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Lo Asu Yisrael as a Egel, and Lelitain Piskon Te Lebalei Tshuva. The only reason why Bnei Yisrael today goes off is to give an ability for Baalei Tshuva to open up their mouths. For a person who's a Baal Tshuva to be able to say to himself, I can do Tshuva, Shnamar Mi Yitain, Vayelavavam Zed Liros Yikol Yamin. Who would give that their hearts, the hearts of the Dor HaMidbar, would be with me all the time? They would be Liros Yikol Yamin. They feared me all those days. I mean, even the days when the day goes off, who would be that way? Yes, 100%. But the day goes off, let's try to understand, who in the world would take, well, what does that mean? What does that mean? Bnei Yisrael got up there and they saw an Egel Azov. And a Kaddish Baruch Hu said, you know what? I want there to be Baalei Tshuva. So I better make them do the Egel Azov that they do tshuva, and that way no Baalei Tshuva are going to complain for the rest of their lives. No! Don't let them do the Egel Azov. They won't sin, and everything will be okay for the rest of their lives. Why do you have to go ahead and say to them, I want them to have Baalei Tshuva, I want them to figure it out, I want them to go ahead and do the Egel Azov. Just don't let it happen in the first place. Says the Chasam Sofer, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew that Bnei Yisrael eventually was going to do something. Granted, at the Egel Azov, the Yetzer Hara wasn't there. It wasn't within them. But the Yetzer Hara on outside of them. With the Yetzer Hara, like, for example, like Eitan over here. Eitan could be that Yetzer Hara who's standing there on the outside of me, saying to me, Tzvi, let's go do this, let's go do that. That would be the Yetzer Hara. And I can very easily say, get out of here, Eitan, I don't want to speak to you. I can very easily say, I don't want to speak to you right now, just move away, I don't want to talk to you. And move around somewhere else. It's not like the Yetzer Hara is inside you like it is now, where it's screaming at you and tearing at your inside, saying, come on, go do that sin, come on, go do that. Then, it was like someone on the outside, you could decide, yeah, maybe, maybe not, I don't know, maybe I want to, maybe I don't want to. You actually have to think about it, and then get yourself to sin. And make yourself sin. That was a big difference. That was a huge, huge, huge difference. Says the Chasam Sofer, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew there were going to be people from Bnei Yisrael that were going to be Miayish. And at that point, where there were people that were going to be Miayish, who knows when, years later, decades later, could have been hundreds of years later, it didn't make a difference. At some point, Bnei Yisrael would have done something wrong, where they would have said to themselves, how in the world could I have sinned? I saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu at our Sinai. I realized that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was there at our Sinai, that we got down the Torah. How could I possibly sin in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And he's going to give up. He's going to think there's no chance. He's not going to do tshuva, and he's going to forget about it for the rest of his life. He's going to think that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to hate me and that there's nothing I can possibly do. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu purposely tripped Bnei Yisrael up. Made them think to do an Egel Azov. He purposely gave them a chait that they weren't roy to do, that they shouldn't have done in the first place. Nobody should have done it. To show them there's a chance that you'll be able to do tshuva later on. There's a chance that anybody, no matter what you do, you can't do anything worse than this. It's like, says the Gemara, No. If they wouldn't have sinned, they would have had a yitzhar on the outside. That's what I was saying before. They would have had a yitzhar on the outside. It would have been easy for them to not sin. But it wouldn't have been that they wouldn't have sinned. Somebody would have sinned. Somebody would have done something wrong. And that person wouldn't have done tshuva. Because he wouldn't have realized there's even a concept of it. Wouldn't even realize there's such a concept. So Kodesh Baruch Hu made them trip up to show them, you couldn't do anything worse than this. This is like a kala that's mezana mitoch chupasa. She sits at her chuppah. She gets married. And then during the dancing, while her husband is dancing on the other side, she's mezana with someone. That's what it's like. Within the first 40 days of when we got the Torah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, where Shira Shirin calls us husband and wife. We are the wife, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the husband. We're sitting there, and we're mezana. We go to a Bodhisattva, and we take something else, and we say, there's nothing worse than this. You can't imagine a chassan that he'd ever forgive his kala for this. There's nothing that a kala could possibly do if she did something so silly. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you can. You can. You can still do something. Granted, it'll take you 40 days. 40 days to be able to do tshuva for this. 40 days of Moshe Rabbeinu begging HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Shemayim, don't destroy them, don't destroy them, don't destroy them. 40 days and 40 nights it took him to do that. But Lamaisa, at the end of the day, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Mochuban and said to them, so there's never a point where you can ever be Miayish ever again. Because there's no sin that's going to even compare to the Egel Azov. There's no sin that's going to come close to that Egel Azov. You couldn't get worse than that. You couldn't. You won't get worse than that. That's the sign. That's the sign that I'm giving you. If you are Miayish at any point in your life, if you say to yourself, I can't do anything better, I can't do anything more, you know that's the Yetzer Hara. You know that that's the Yetzer Hara saying it to you, because it can't be. You couldn't have done anything worse than the Egel Azov, and yet it still works.
Miragim took 40 years to fix. I mean, that's this took 40 days.
The tikkun is not the ikkar. Not how long it takes. Not how long it takes to fix it up. The ikkar is the sin. The sin of the Miragim does not compare to the sin of the Egel Azov. Egel Azov, in all ways, shapes, and form, was the worst sin that anybody could ever do. That you see a God and you think something else is God instead. Yeah,
It may be the worst sin, but it doesn't even seem like that. I mean, someone died, it wasn't like...
The fact that Bnei Yisrael didn't go crazy when they saw that somebody was even thinking about making an Egel Azov, even though some people weren't involved, even though there were people that were standing around, the fact that people didn't say, like, what in the world is wrong with you? They didn't go crazy. 39 days ago, we saw Kadosh Baruch Hu, and now you're doing this? The fact that nobody said that is just nuts. It's like somebody getting up in the middle of shul, and somebody getting up and like making an idol, and just being like, don't worry about it, guys, everything's fine, and everybody just ignoring it. Everybody just saying that, don't worry.
It doesn't seem like sin was bad and horrible, but they didn't get, like, you were given such a horrible punishment.
40 days is
the punishment was what we're suffering right now. There's not one chait, not one onish that anybody gets in Olam Hazeh that doesn't have within it a little bit of the Egel Azov.
But my point is that it sounds like the real thing was
No. We don't know what would happen if Moshe Rabbeinu would have gone to Eretz Yisrael. I know what we say and what we say would have happened. We don't know what would have happened then. This was the ultimate sin that caused every other sin to happen. The Egel Azov was the end all. 100%. And in and of itself, that seems to be a little bit of a problem. What were they thinking? Because remember, one of the Yud Gimel Ikarim is that Moshe Rabbeinu was the ultimate Navi and there's no one like him. He was the one that brought them to Har Sinai. And even so, there were still people that were saying there's a little bit of Avodah Zarah here. But I'll just tell you very quickly, the Shabian that says that Stam Sora and they kill Kur over it. I mean, Stam, the nephew of Moshe Rabbeinu. I'll tell you also, Luchos HaBris. You will never see the word Bris with the Luchos after the Egel Azov. Never. It always says the Luchos HaBris, and then it goes into the Egel, and then it calls them the Luchos. Luchos HaEdus, it'll call it. It'll never call it. You know why? Because beforehand, it was Luchos HaBris. There were only 612 mitzvos within the Luchos. Bris is the gematria of 612. Tshuva was not there. There was no such thing as tshuva. That's the idea, that there was no such mitzvah. After the Egel Azov, where tshuva was introduced to Klal Yisrael, was brought in and said, you can always do tshuva, then it was no longer the Luchos HaBris. It became the Luchos HaEdus because it was 613 mitzvahs. Then it became the Taryag mitzvahs altogether. That's what it ended up becoming. That's the idea, says Chassam Sofer, for what's going on here. Now, I got a story. I got a really, really crazy story. There's a pasuk. It says in Perek Ches, pasuk Hei, V'yadatim levecha, you will know with your heart, ki kasher yaser ishes b'no, like a father sometimes has to chastise his child, Hashem lokecha miyasrecha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu will give you, he'll chastise you as well. I'll tell you. It's obvious that if you see your kid run into the street, you don't go up to him and say, Connie, come on, don't do that ever again. You scream bloody murder at him. Not because necessarily you want to, because you know you have to. This kid cannot, he has to know. He cannot run in the street ever again. You have to scream at him and say, you never go in the street ever again. Never, ever. If I see you in the street again, you're going to be punished. You have to. Because if you say that, honey, don't do that again, he's going to run in the street again. And chas v'shalom, there might be a car there. You don't want to have to deal with something like that. You know that that happens sometimes. There are times where you know you have to do this. And Rabbi Loeb, Rabbi Dr. Jerry Loeb, speaks about this all the time. He has that famous story. We had to hold his son while his son was getting a shot. And his son thought that his father was protecting him, right? His father is protecting him. He'll make sure that that evil doctor is not going to give him a shot. And then all of a sudden, he gives him a shot. He gives the kid a shot. And his son looks up at Rabbi Loeb with that face of horror. Like, who are you? What did you just do to me? How could you have done this? Like, well, I thought you were my dad. How could you allow this person to do such terrible things to me, to stick a needle into me? But we know that it's done for the best of the child. Kasher yaser ishes b'no, like a person chastises his child and gives yisurin to his child. That's what a Kadosh Baruch Hu is doing to us. You know it in your heart. Here's the Ben Ish Chai. It is an awesome Ben Ish Chai. Ben Ish Chai says there was a rich man that came before a Talmud Chacham. And he said the following. He said, Rebbe, I know that everybody says Gimel Dalet. Gimel Dalet stands for the following. Geneva Dalos. That if you steal, you'll become poor. That you won't be matzliach in what you steal. If you steal money, you won't be matzliach with the money that you stole. You'll end up losing that money. You'll need more money. If you steal, you'll be poor. I know that's true. But I have a problem. When I was 14 years old, my family was very, very poor. We ate barley bread every day. We had vegetables. We had nothing else. Each meal was mamish made up of barley bread and vegetables. We had nothing else that we could afford. There was nothing else there. We were just very, very poor. Every year, the only coins that I ever had were a couple copper coins that my father would give to me on Purim. That was my Purim gelt. That's all I got all year long. I never had any other money. I was 14 years old. I had mamish nothing. So one day it was very cold. My Rebbe was just, he couldn't take the cold. He was freezing cold inside the room, and he's trying to teach us, but you could tell he was shivering, and he wasn't feeling well, and he wasn't doing so good. And in the middle of the shiur, he said, oh, if only I had a warm drink. If only I had a really warm drink to be able to drink. So I love my Rebbe very much, the child said. And he said, I went up to my Rebbe, and I said to him, Rebbe, please, if you give me a little bit of money, I'll run to the store, the bar, because back then they trusted little kids with drinks, and I'll go buy you like a warm drink. I'll go buy you something and I'll bring it back to you. I'll go buy you some whiskey and I'll bring it back. So the Rebbe looked in his wallet. There was nothing inside there. Then he realized he had something. He pulled it out, and it was a silver coin, but it was a fake silver coin. It wasn't real silver. It's like one of those fake coins that has like a silver plating on the top, but it wasn't a real silver coin. And a person who knew, that the business people, they knew this wasn't a real silver coin, said, "Oy vey, I have absolutely nothing." So the boy said, "Can I have that silver coin, Rebbe?" He said, "What are you going to do with it?" He said, "I'll give it to my son, to my brother. Give it to my little brother. He'll play with it. It's a nice little thing for him to have." So the Rebbe gave it to him. He said, go ahead and take it." So right afterward, he went straight to the bar. He had a whole plan. He did the following. He knew that the bar was going to be full of people, because by lunchtime, the place was full. And especially on a cold day like today, there were going to be a ton of people getting drinks and doing those types of things, and all those types of, you know, getting all those drinks together. He knew that that was what was going to happen. So he said, he ran inside, the little kid ran inside, ran up to the counter, said, "Hurry, sir, my father needs a drink, please, get him a drink very quickly." The bartender was dealing with 20 people at once, pulling this guy, pulling that guy, pulling that guy. He didn't look at my coin, he quickly took my coin, threw it in his pile of silver coins, and then he brought me a drink, took the cup, filled it up with meat or beer, whatever it was, and he filled it up with whatever it was, filled it up with this drink that'll warm up, and gave it to me. I said, "Thank you so much," and I ran outside. I quickly took the drink, poured it into another cup, and then filled that original cup with water, and ran back to the bartender. Ran back to the bartender. And I said, "My father says he wanted wine, he didn't want beer." That's what the kid said. And the guy was still in the midst of doing this and that and the other. He like quickly takes the cup, which is filled with water, pours it back into his thing full of beer, you know, pours it back inside there, takes out a silver coin, gives it to the kid. So the kid, not only did he steal one silver coin, a silver coin worth of beer, he stole two silver coins. He got a silver coin out of it. He brought the beer to his Rebbe, gave the beer over to his Rebbe. His Rebbe took it, said, "Thank you so much." The next day, he said, "Where did you get the money from?" He said, "Oh, I borrowed from somebody. I borrowed money from somebody, so I got to pay back tomorrow." The next day, the Rebbe gave him a silver coin for the trouble, and the boy ended up with two silver coins. Two silver coins. First time he'd ever seen a silver coin in his life. He never had a silver coin in his pocket. So at 14 years old, he said, when he was speaking about this later on, he felt bad. He wanted to pay back the bartender. But he said, "You know what? It's not enough for me to pay back the bartender the two coins. Not enough for me to even pay Kapel. I don't even want to pay Kapel. I'm going to pay back the bartender 10 silver coins for the trouble that I caused. I'm going to pay him back 10. So he went ahead and he did business with it. He did business with it. And what did he do? It's classic. I wish I would have seen this Ben Ishchai before. He bought candies to sell at the school that he was learning at with his Rebbe. He was the first entrepreneur. Little entrepreneur, and he bought all these candies and he sold them for copper coins. And he ended up making so much money, he got this and that and the other. It ended up being, he soon had 100 silver coins. 100 silver coins. And he was like, "Okay, now I can start paying it back." But he's like, "You know what? I'm not ready yet. I don't want to pay that guy back 10 silver coins. I'm going to pay the guy back 50 silver coins. So I'm going to make more business. I'll sell more, even more stuff. I'll make more money off it. And then I'll make even more. I'll do more and more and more." Soon, he ended up doing this and that, whatever. He had 1,000 golden coins. Golden coins. And then he said, "Like, I'm going to give him, I don't want to do it yet. I'm going to give him 200 golden coins for his trouble. For the 2 silver coins that I bought, that I took from him, I'm going to give him 200 golden coins. So he did more and more, and he became so rich, he ended up having 20,000 dinari zahav. 20,000 dinari zahav. He was known as the richest Jew in his entire city. And at that point, he said, "All right, now I have enough. Now I think I'm going to pay this guy back." He made a suuda. Huge suuda, invited over all the richest people of the city, his Rebbe and the bartender. He invited them all together. The bartender got the invitation. He looks at it, he's like, "What in the world? What am I being invited to this thing for?" But he didn't want to turn it down. Somebody this rich and powerful invites you over to a meal, you don't turn it down. He just didn't know what was going on. They went to the house, he sat there, and they gave a huge meal, put the whole meal together, and as soon as everything was said and done, all the rich men got up to leave, and he called over his Rebbe and the bartender, and he said, "Please come here." And he sat them down in his office, and he said to them, he told them the entire story of what happened. The Rebbe sits there open-mouthed. He said, I don't even remember you giving me the drink. I don't remember this whole thing happening." The bartender, of course, has no idea what's going on. Absolutely no idea. So he takes out 2 silver coins, and he gives it over to the bartender. He said to the bartender, "Here was the 2 silver coins that I stole from you. These are the 2 silver coins. Take back the 2 silver coins. I'm so sorry." Then he takes out a bag of 200 golden coins. And he gives to him and he said, I gave you my word. You didn't even know about this, but I gave my word. I owed you 200 gold coins for the trouble that I gave you. I'm so sorry. And he gives him over the bag of 200 gold coins and gives it over. Finishes the mice in front of the Rebbe and said, that happened last week. I've got a question, Rebbe. Why was I matzliach? I stole the money. And I was unbelievably matzliach. You see me now. I'm the richest man in all of Iraq. There's no one richer than me. So why? Why was I why did I have that tzchus? Why was I so matzliach with the money that I have? Now here's the difference between an Ashkenazi and a Sephardi. An Ashkenazi guy would have been like, we don't know these types of things. You know, how are you supposed to answer? We don't understand these types of things. It's just, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted you to do it. It's Abdeli Achait. You have to do tshuva, and that was it. The Sephardi had an answer. Of course he had an answer. He told him the following. He said, when you originally stole the coins, it's true, you stole and you did a chait. But you did it thinking you were doing a mitzvah. And you honestly thought that you were doing a mitzvah. You didn't convince yourself it was a mitzvah. You honestly thought that it was a mitzvah that you were bringing a drink over to your Rebbe. And you wanted to do it so badly so that your Rebbe would get a drink. So because of that, you didn't have any pania for your own hana or anything like that. You were able to be matzliach with that one coin. The second coin was 100% stolen. There was no good thought in that, and that was evil, and you shouldn't have been matzliach with that one coin. You shouldn't have been matzliach with that second coin. That was pure geneva. But your charata was be'emes. You really, truly had charata. You felt bad your whole life while you had all this money, and you were sitting there, and it was so easy to forget that you had promised to give over that money to that guy. You had promised that you were going to give over that money. It's so easy to forget that, oh, yeah, 200 gold coins, come on, I only stole 2 silver coins from it. So easy for the Yitzhar to get a hold of you, but you wouldn't let it. You wouldn't let that happen. You kept having that Jewish mama's guilt sitting within you, waiting within you, saying that you want to do this, you want to do that. That gave you a bracha, and caused the bracha l'yichal on top of your money to give you atzlacha, and that's the pshat behind v'yadata im levavecha in the pasuk. You will know, Kadosh Baruch Hu knows what's in your heart. You were thinking such good thoughts when you did this, and you weren't faking it. It's not like a guy who stole money, I thought it was a good thing. You mamish thought it. You were a 14-year-old innocent kid who mamish thought it, and you continue to do it even now. Because the inside was all 100% MS, you were able to be matzliach with your money. I can't tell you, said the Rav, what's going to be in Olam Haba. I can't tell you what's going to be if you took over, if all your atzlacha in Olam Haza is taken away from your Olam Haba or not. That I can't tell you. I have absolutely no idea. But I will tell you that you did something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu felt you should be matzliach for. Says the Ben Ishchai, it's the exact opposite way as well. When you do a mitzvah, you sit there and you say to yourself, why isn't HaKadosh Baruch Hu rewarding me for the tefillin that I wear in the morning? For the benching that I do after I eat bread. For the brachos that I make before I have any bit of food. For everything that I do. Why am I not being rewarded for it? Why am I not getting this or that or the other and everything like that? So granted, okay, you could say your reward is to live. Maybe you should have died. Your reward is that you found a dollar in the street and you didn't realize that was your reward. Who knows what your reward is? Says the Ben Ishchai. Know what your reward is? Your reward is nothing. Because what were you thinking when you're doing that mitzvah? If your thought process went something like, I better put on tefillin because if I don't, you know, it's going to be bad. And you put on your tefillin, there's no reward to give you. You didn't do the mitzvah be'emes. The only reward that you'll get is an olam haba. Because schar mitzvah is b'hay al malacha. You don't get schar for the actual mitzvahs that you do. But if you did the mitzvah b'simcha, u'b'yosher levav, if you did it in the right way, you're guaranteed to be rewarded in olam hazeh. You're guaranteed. You're going to get something for it. It's an absolute guarantee. But you got to wake up in the morning and say, I want to put on tefillin. I want to put on tefillin. You got to wake up in the morning and say, I'm putting on tzitzis, and I'm getting a mitzvah every second that I put on tzitzis. You have to say it that way, and you have to say it b'simcha. If you don't do that, you won't get rewarded. If you do that, then you will get rewarded, since of any shchai. That's the adatim levecha. You're wondering why HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you yisurin? You don't have to wonder. Look deep down inside you. You'll find it. It's there. You realize why. You haven't thought about it yet. You just didn't really think about it yet. The final thing. The Maral Diskin. This is an unbelievable mashal. We're not privy to the type of relationship that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had with Dor HaMidbar. But I want you to imagine a man who's in the phone business. He's in the phone business. And this is what he does. He sells droids. Not into iPhones, nothing like that, just droids. The mashal, this isn't the Maral Diskin's mashal, just in case. You know, it's similar, but I didn't think that anybody really sold kernels of wheat. So I kind of switched the mashal around a little bit. First time he gets a shipment, all his friends in the business decide to raise their prices for every droid, it'll be raised by $2. So they're going to pay the guy, the manufacturer, an extra $2, or not the manufacturer, the middleman, going to pay him an extra dollar or something for the business that he's done, which means that he expected to make a certain amount of money. He ended up making almost three times that much because of the extra dollar that's being added on for every phone that he's selling. He didn't expect that to happen. He got a much larger profit. The next time, iPhones had a glitch, and nobody was buying iPhones. Everyone was buying droids instead. So the next time he got a shipment, everybody bought droids, and he made another huge profit because the iPhones went down for some reason. The third time, T-Mobile decides they're only using droids, they're cutting out every other thing, and they're making droid their official phone. So all of a sudden, this guy has a plethora of droids, and everybody goes to him and says, oh, we need your droids. So all of a sudden, he makes a third time, he makes a massive, massive profit. Then a fourth time something happens, fifth time something happens, sixth time. At the end of the year, the guy looks at his year, and he looks at himself. He was expecting to make $150,000 to $200,000. He ended up making $850,000. $850,000. He had a great year. But there's no names. There's not a single miracle here, right? I mean, the whole thing was natural. The whole thing was just normal. It was just tremendous luck. It just happened to be in the way that worked out really good for him. But there's no miracles. You hear a miraculous story here? Like, there was nothing miraculous here. Let's say somebody would have said to him at the beginning of the year, when he expected to make that $150,000, and said to him, this year you are going to make $850,000. So you're going to make $850,000. The guy's like, what? $850,000? Do you realize what's going to happen for me to make $850,000? There's no way. There's absolutely no way it can happen. And then as the year went by, then the iPods went down, and T-Mobile decided to get them. Everybody decided to raise their prices. And another thing, and another thing, and another thing, and another thing. And then all of a sudden, he looks at the end of the year, and he made $850,000. What's he going to say about that guy? Now all of a sudden, it becomes a miracle. Now, all of a sudden, the guy said it to him beforehand. The guy said to him, you're going to make $150,000. This is exactly what happened. He looks at him and he says, it's unbelievable. How did you know? You're a Navi. You're a prophet. That's absolutely crazy. There's no way anybody could have known that. That's awesome. How were you able to figure all that out? How were you able to do all that? That's what he'll say to him. Kadosh Baruch Hu does that for us every single year. He says to us before Rosh Hashanah, he comes up to us and he tells us, this is how much money you're going to make. And even though you were expecting to make a certain amount of money, at the end of the year, you ended up making exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said you would. Exactly what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said you would. No less. That exact amount. That's awesome. The problem is, we're not privy to that conversation beforehand. We don't know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu said. We don't know the numbers. He never says exactly what it is. Never says exactly what it is. So we don't get that chance to go up to the guy and be like, read my poem. How much am I going to get? What am I going to do? You don't have that ability. You can't have that because the guy's not there. He's not there. HaKadosh Baruch Hu isn't there. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to show Bnei Yisrael exactly what was going to happen when he went to Eretz Yisrael. Nobody would have guessed that they would have defeated 31 kings in Eretz Yisrael. 31 kings. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to them, you're going to go to Eretz Yisrael, it's going to be darn hard, you're crossing over in Parak Tes, it's a crazy land with huge giants, you're going to knock down every single one, and guess what? Not a single one of you is going to die. And guess what? You're going to destroy 31 kings. And guess what? You're going to defeat Zichron and Og. Before everything happened, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told them what was going to be. That's the definition of a miracle. The definition of a miracle. You know, the Ramban says the Kibshon HaEsh never made the Torah. Kibshon HaEsh, Moshe Rabbeinu, Avraham Avinu being thrown to the Kibshon HaEsh. Huge miracle. Thrown to the Kibshon HaEsh. It never made it into the Torah. You know why? Because a miracle is nothing if nobody prophesies about it beforehand. You could say anything you want, but unless somebody would have gotten up in front of the 1967 war and would have gotten up and said, this war will be won by the Israelis, and there's going to be 50 tanks against one, and the one tank is going to win, it doesn't seem like that big of a miracle. And Moshe Dayan can come out and say it was nothing. It's just Israeli ingenuity. Israeli ingenuity was able to do it. If somebody would have said before 1973, on Yom Kippur, can you imagine a Rav would have gotten up on Yom Kippur night, right before Kol Nidre. He would have called up and he would have said, there's going to be a war starting tomorrow. It's going to be a huge war. We're going to go up against Syria, Lebanon, well, that's not that big of a deal, Egypt, all the Arabs, and the Russians are going to be on their side, and we're going to win the war in 6 days. 6 days. I promise that. And we're going to get Sinai back. And we're going to get everything back. So imagine if somebody would have said that. What would have happened? What would have happened? It's crazy. Everybody would look at it after everything was said and done. They'd be like, that's crazy. How do you know that? How were you able to figure that out? That would have been crazy. We don't get it. Because we don't have the relationship that we had with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's not the same relationship as we had before. It's not the same relationship as we could possibly have like they had back then. Then it felt like a miracle, a nace. And that's the whole point of this parsha. When a person looks to Akiva and says, what are you telling me that I don't know? What are you telling me? It's all extraneous, all repetitious, all going through. It's because this is the miracle. The miracle is that I'm telling you what's going to happen. You don't realize this yet. Because we're looking at it with hindsight and we're saying, well, yeah, of course that happened. We won. It was fine. But they're looking at it before it happened. And Moshe is telling you, here's what's going to happen. And they saw it, and they did it, and it was awesome. It's like predicting the Six-Day War. It's like predicting how much money you're going to have for the entire year. Says the Maral Ditzkin, there was no greater miracle than that. When you see something like that, you'll be able to start controlling your tithes. When you realize there's an idea out there of a Kadosh Baruch Hu announcing, we just don't hear it, but a Kadosh Baruch Hu announcing what's happening, then you might start seeing every profit and every loss that a person has during the year, you'll start seeing it as, wow, this is really a miracle. Not just a natural occurrence based on the economics of the system and everything like that. No, this is really a miracle. It's crazy how much money I've lost on my house since I bought it. But it's not so crazy. Yeah, it's natural. With the housing market, eventually it was going to happen. Energy was eventually going to implode. I mean, something had to happen, right? It's an ace. It's an ace. And for the people that are buying houses now, that ace was somewhat made for you. That ace was made for you to be able to buy a house now. And not before. Can you imagine the person who bought the house right before the housing market got destroyed? The guy who bought it like the day before, he bought his house for $450,000, the next day it's down to $380,000. She's like, oh, gosh, that was a bad move. How would he know? How would he have any idea? In the same way, like a guy who bought stocks and something in the World Trade Center the day before 9/11, September 10th, he's like, I'm going to buy stocks. And the next day, that was a bad move. But he had no idea. How would he have any idea? That's it. If you look at it that way, then all of a sudden it becomes a little bit different. So what do we talk about? We talk about pure souls want to do what a Kadosh Baruch Hu says. All mitzvos end up becoming mishpatim because of that. Don't ever have yush. You can always come back. That's the point of the Egel Azov. Sometimes it's the kavana that counts, not the maisa. It's the kavana that a person has and the ideas that he has behind it. And a Kadosh Baruch Hu's guarantee that he's saying to us, he's showing his closeness to us, how close he is to us and how much he wants us and how much he wants to deal with us. That's the idea behind what we have to start thinking when we go through our everyday. Have a good Shabbos, everybody.